Well, hello, welcome, and greetings. You Hola. Are now listening to the maiden voyage of the V Cinema podcast. This is episode one. Welcome, everyone.
Welcome.
Yes. So, let's see. This is our first show, so I guess we should really talk about what we're doing and who we are and everything, right? I mean, let's see. Well, I can introduce you very quickly right here.
Starring in almost 50 major motion pictures, he's not exactly pretty, but his striking talent and dark edge more than make up for that. He's Willem Dafoe.
Hello. How are you doing?
Oh, hey, man. What's going on? Just had my penis crushed and wanted to stop in, see what's going on.
Sweet, sweet. Hope you brought some kind of souvenirs for us, like some crushed penis.
Crushed penis and, you know, severed clitoris.
Mm-mm.
Brought that along for the show.
Goes well with beer. So anyway, seriously, so let's talk a little bit about ourselves. I guess what we'll do is we'll just interview ourselves a little bit. Let me start with you. So who are you, sir?
Josh Zemford, Destroyer of the Young.
Okay, Josh. So what do you do? Why are you on the show?
I write and review movies, have been doing so since 2003. Started up my website, variedcellular.net, back when I didn't have any idea that that was going to be a really hard name to pronounce. And I met this guy, John, a.k.a. Coffin John, and he introduced me to the world of podcasting, and here I am.
All right. So we're doing our format here is we're basically going to be doing cult film and genre film, et cetera. So how did you get into genre film, Josh, if that's your real
name? Josh. No, it's not. It's a fake name.
Okay.
Real name's Pants Man. It's something. Got into cult film, I don't know, probably through Evil Dead, I guess. Seeing that when I was about 4, 6 years old, something like that. And revisiting it in my early teenage years. And from there, just went from that to kung fu movies to, you know, Asian cinema, anything with extreme amounts of gore. And then that led to, you know, Godard and art house cinema.
I see. Okay.
It's a slippery slope. Once you get on it, you go into this.
Oh, yes.
And a little bit of that. Yes. And the next thing you know, you're watching, you know, 50-minute movies with girls disemboweling themselves.
Right. And for, you know, like many other people, too, you know, Evil Dead is that sort of gateway drug, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the first movie that made me realize, you know, that how much goes into, like, filmmaking, you know, between the sound and the,
right,
the amazing, like, cinematography and everything like that. So, like, all that, and on such a small budget and so effective, it just made me realize, wow, you know, that's how they do it.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think for myself, Taxi Driver, which was a movie I saw when I was really young, that sort of did that for me because, you know, there's that scene, especially at the very end, where there's that tracking shot that's coming from the ceiling, you know, with the aftermath, yeah, of everything, you know. That's that really, you know, opened my eyes to, wow, you know, cinema is more than just, you know, flashy stuff and entertainment, you know. So anyway, while we're at it, my name is Coffin John, of course. I'm from the V Cinema webcast, for those of you who've caught that. For those of you who haven't, V Cinema started as a webcast and basically like a TV show, I guess you'd call it, of sorts. I would just talk and then play a full-length movie and everyone would join up in the chat room and we'd just all joke and have fun and everything.
Talk about the lamp.
Right, the lamp, the famous lamp. The lamp is right behind me, too.
Oh, man.
Overlooking everything.
Hot lamp action.
Yeah, the lamp is the overseer, the all-knowing one.
Next to a suffering family.
You don't, you don't talk, you don't speak of the lamp, okay?
Well, okay.
Okay.
It's cool, man, it's cool. We're all good here.
Yep, we're all good, shut up.
Okay.
So anyway, so, as for cult film myself, I got into it. Well, I got into cult film when I was very young. My parents are very big genre film fans and took my brother and I to the drive-in theaters all the time. In fact, I saw lots of good movies. I saw Alien at the drive-in, of all things. I'm not too sure why my parents would want to bring me to that, but maybe they didn't know like how harsh that movie would be.
Guts exploding out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Jeez. But they were always kind of cool about that, and they're still very big fans of genre film. My mother especially, when I borrow or Netflix DVDs, she always asks me, like, oh, does it have guns? Does that shooting? Well, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, you can't beat that, you know.
That's awesome. That.
And I would say to this day, they've seen way more films than I have, and I think that I've seen, you know, a lot of stuff, but... You know, they've seen tons and tons, and my father especially, he's into Westerns too, so he's seen a lot more Westerns, for example, than I have.
So you get into spaghetti Westerns?
Yeah, I mean, he'll watch them. He's kind of more into the American side of Westerns, right? The John Waynes and the...
John Ford.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
Anything that plays on the Western channel, basically.
Yeah, like that kind of thing, right. Okay, well, now that we're finished with that segment, why don't we talk about what we've been doing? So what have you been doing, Josh? What have you been watching, reading, playing, enjoying?
Well, been playing a little bit of Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
Old school, huh?
Oh, yeah. Pop that in. I've been put in probably about 10 hours, I guess, on it or something like that.
All right.
But I suck at it, so it keeps kicking my ass.
And you're playing that, what, on your original PlayStation or something?
Something like that. The Wii. Playing it on there.
Oh, right.
Yeah. let's say maybe not by the most legit ways, but it's on there. You know, it's the game.
Oh.
Runs a little slower, but it's good.
So it's kind of like the ways, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Gotcha.
Let's not talk too heavy into that.
All right. But,
what I've been watching, I wrote down some movies. I've watched recently Full Cheese the Psychic.
Oh.
Which I like.
Right.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. It's a good one.
I was
kind
of impressed with that. Yeah, I didn't expect it to really be that good. I was kind of more expecting something like Manhattan Baby, but yeah, it was actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of strange ending to it, but aside from that, Cannibal Holocaust 2, the Catherine Miles story, or Amazonia, the Catherine Miles story, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, I haven't seen that. How is it?
Yeah. It's actually, I mean, you know, I had read a long time back that it was actually pretty weak for a cannibal flick, so I didn't really search it out or anything like that, but surprisingly, it was actually pretty good. It was about what you expect from a cannibal movie, you know? Real animals being killed by other animals, and then blood, gore, basic stuff.
Oh, it's that kind of cannibal.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
It was all right.
Mm-hmm.
Better than, like, Cannibal Ferox, if you ask me, but I'm not a big fan of that movie.
I see.
Short Night of the Glass Dolls, which was a pretty good little giallo. Violence in a Women's Prison by Matei, or Matei.
Right. Bruno Matei.
not what you'd expect from him. It wasn't as good as Women's Prison Massacre, but it was all right.
Not as good as. Well, what does that mean exactly?
I mean, not as violent and strange.
Uh-huh.
one thing about Women's Prison Massacre I liked was that it was almost like watching a sci-fi movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, this doesn't take place in reality. But
right.
Violence in a Women's Prison's more kind of mundane, more ordinary. Even though you can tell they shot it on, I mean, they must have shot these movies back to back. They were released like a year or so apart,
mm-hmm.
but you got the same sets. Because you can recognize the bars.
Right.
The bars in these movies have, you know, they're not just regular vertical lines. The bars are actually like diamonds and stuff.
Oh,
so,
right.
You know, they got the same that, and then they got Gabriel Tinti, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Gimser, I forget her name, the girl from Cannibal Ferox and Women's Prison Massacre. I was just talking about her the other day. The star girl from Cannibal Ferox, the one who's the reporter or whatever.
Oh, yes.
Black hair. DeSalle.
Right.
Yeah. But her, yeah, she's in it, and she was in. All of them were in the same, you know, back-to-back movies, and it just looks like they probably were shooting them at the same exact time, and probably just sat on the shelf for a year or so.
Probably right. Oh, her yeah. Her name is Lorraine DeSalle. Oh,
Lorraine DeSalle.
Right.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Also, I guess I'm trying to watch Conquest from Fulci right now, but
ooh. Yeah, trying is the very operative word here, right?
Exactly. I'm like,
in fact, I might even say slogging might be like the more appropriate term here.
Very true. I'm like, so far it's so strange. I'm just like, what was he thinking? And I was reading in his little bio on the DVD, and it has something there where it's a quote from Fulci, and he's like, my favorite kind of movie is the fantasy, but everyone around here is so stupid, and they don't want to make this kind of movie, and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, man, well, maybe you shouldn't have to. Or why did you? Yeah. I watched Alligator last night with Robert Forster.
Oh, right, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, I remember the VHS box for that one. I think I saw it maybe on TV once. I don't remember, but yeah, that's a pretty good one. That's a pretty fun one, yeah.
Yeah. My cousin and I, we like to watch animals on the loose type movies.
Right.
So we like anything, especially the worse it gets, usually the more fun we have. So right now, nothing beats Great White, aka Italian Jaws, aka Le Ultimo Squalo.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's probably the best one we've come across. But Alligator was all right.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Giant Octopus versus Mega Shark.
Oh, God, yeah. I watched that a few weeks ago. That was a royal waste of my time. It was kind of fun, but at the same time, I was like, well, I could have been doing something a lot more productive within that couple hours.
it was so B movie.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, it was pretty fun. I guess, you know. I mean, you know, I guess it would have been made a lot better by just, you know, drinking a lot of beer or something, you know. But
great trailer for it though.
Yeah.
You know, looked like it was going to be the, you know, giant animal movie.
Right.
To end all giant animal movies, but instead it was just kind of boring.
Well, sometimes that's all it takes to make a good movie is to make a good trailer, right?
Yeah.
Or to sell a movie. I shouldn't say make a movie, because it takes a lot more than a good trailer to make a movie.
I saw that they had, that thing was like on the top 10 most viewed trailers for the previous year or whatever.
Wow.
They had to make some bank off of
that. Yeah, that's crazy. A lot of crazy people out there.
So what have you been checking out recently?
Let's see. I've been busy getting ready for school. As you guys may know, I'm in graduate school, and I'm in my last semester coming up, and it's really busy. So I'm kind of preparing for that. But as far as playing, well, I don't play games as much as I used to, but I've been playing a lot of Left 4 Dead 2 on the PC with some of my online friends, and we've been playing probably two or three times a night. It's a lot of fun.
Dang.
Yeah. Have you played it?
I've played the first one.
Oh, the first one.
I didn't play it online. No.
Okay. The second one is actually pretty different from the first one. The first one is kind of, yeah, I was actually talking about this with my friends online last night. Was the first one's kind of better if you're getting together with friends for, like, competition, like the versus mode and the, what's the other mode with the, I forget. Anyway, so, but the second one is better, actually, if you're in campaign mode.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot more, the second.
That's usually what I play anyway.
Oh, okay. You'd probably like the second one. It's a lot more challenging. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, so that's basically all I've been playing. I have a lot of games. I always have a big stack of games I have to play. So kind of like Heaven's Trash with his to watch pile. I have a gigantic to play pile.
Yeah, he watched 6 movies yesterday, man.
Yeah, I know, that's crazy.
God.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't know. I was kind of laughing with him over Twitter that, you know, that's all cool and stuff. You know, I like watching a lot of movies, but when it becomes a job, I don't like,
oh, yeah,
you know, just like any other kind of job. But speaking of watching, I haven't been watching a whole lot lately. I've been sort of slowing down on my viewing just because I've been busy with school. But, of course, I did watch our movie for review this evening.
Yes.
I watched, I watched Public Enemies. It recently came out on DVD. Yeah. Have you seen it?
Yeah. Yeah. What'd you think?
I thought it was, you know, it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. A lot of people sort of, ragged on it. And I would say, at least visually, it's better than I thought it was going to be, because a lot of people said that, you know, basically Michael Mann, the director, was trying to, you know, transplant these more, contemporary film ideas into, you know, an older setting.
With the DV and all that.
Right, exactly. But I didn't feel that, you know, that didn't detract from the film for me. And there were a couple scenes that were really good. Like when they first bring, Dillinger out of the airplane?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I thought that was a pretty nice scene. I mean, it was a little on the cheesy side, but it had just enough effectiveness to, you know, make me feel what was going on, you know.
Yeah.
But,
I caught that one in theaters, actually.
Oh, okay.
On the View. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was, I liked it. I didn't really feel, like, too passionate about it or anything like that. But, yeah, I liked it generally. I mean, I thought it was a good way to spend an hour, 2 hours. You know?
Right. I thought the narrative was a little weak, though. That was the only thing. It felt like that there were only, like, a couple of things that you had to understand about the movie was, you know, this is the bad guy, this is the good guy, this is the, you know, the relationship, the romance. And, you know, the dialogue was almost like a wash, sort of, you know, just kind of mumbling, and I didn't catch it narratively, but stylistically, I thought it was okay.
Yeah, it looked good, I thought, And I didn't have any problems with the DV either, the digital video.
Right.
Looked good to me, you know, I mean, I can suspend disbelief, you know?
Right. And anyway, as far as reading goes, I've been trying to catch up on a bunch of the older Roger Ebert review books that I hadn't read for some time. I got I think some of you may have seen, I got a Kindle for Christmas, bought for myself. So I got, you know, like, for example, Your Movie Sucks. That's Ebert's, a collection of Ebert's least favorite movies, I guess you could say. But, so I've just been enjoying that. Yeah, that's it. Okay. Anyway, I guess we should move off into our review segment. We have a movie for review. And, but before that, let's take a quick, music break. Okay. How about that?
That'll work.
Okay. And, I guess just to give everyone a little hint as to what we're reviewing, here we go.
Why do you have bullets in your chest?
We'll see you in a little bit. Hey, and welcome back. This is VCinema, the podcast, episode one. And since we are a cult film podcast, we do have to, of course, well, we don't have to, but we know that you'd like to hear a little movie review. So we did choose a film for you guys. And the little hint before the segment break might have keyed you off, but let's hear a little trailer and you can figure it out.
Mickey Hall. Come forward.
Ricky Hogue, 21 years old, sentenced to serve 10 years for manslaughter and assault.
Hey, I didn't say you can leave. He's carrying.
Someone gave me 30 pounds of rice to finish you off and turn you into mincemeat and put you in a pot.
Hey, stop that. Hey, what do you want?
And then I cut you up and give your pizza to the dog.
So, in case you couldn't figure out, we're going to be reviewing the perennial favorite, Ricky O, The Story of Ricky.
Every time I hear any of those lines,
exactly.
I was like trying to hold my mouth a little bit there during the...
And not very successful at that. And of course, we're talking about this line.
Why do you have bullets in your chest?
Oh, yes. Yes, I love that. It's the sound of heaven. Yeah. So Josh, why did we choose Ricky O? I mean, this is kind of like an easy shot. This is like for cult film reviewers, this should be like, you know, shooting fish out of a barrel, right?
Yeah, it is, but you know, I mean, there's not a lot of, I hadn't seen a whole lot of shows doing it though, you know. But it was what, our second?
Yeah, podcast? It was the second.
Second movie after Dead Alive, aka Brain Dead. And one of the most fun webcasts we've had.
Very true.
You know, right up there, Death Laid an Egg, which we did not watch again, thankfully. And I don't know, it's nice to start off with something relatively easy.
I'm sorry, what was the movie that you said that we had didn't watch a second time?
That Death Laid an Egg.
Yes. Very many people echo that sentiment.
Yes. Are actually people that seem to like that movie.
It's going
to
be a classic among our listeners. I'm very sure of that. Josh, why don't you lead off with a little synopsis and go into the review for Ricky O, okay?
Okay. Based upon a Japanese manga, Ricky O, The Story of Ricky, describes the hardships of Ricky O, a young man with inhuman strength and unsurpassable martial arts skill. Ricky's imprisoned after seeking revenge on a gang of drug dealers who kidnap and involuntarily murder his girlfriend, taking place in the bleak future 2001, where the correctional systems have been made public instead of government-owned. Ricky discovers that the most evil foes within these walls are actually those put in place to control the system. The warden and his burly assistant warden control a massive drug crop on location within the prison and use the most ruthless prisoners, titled the Gang of Four, to control the weaker inmates and keep everyone from questioning the rules. Ricky makes it his life's goal to seek justice within the prison and bring order to the weaker prisoners. Along the way, he'll bludgeon, crush, and punch holes in anyone who stands up for the powers of evil.
Sounds like my high school experience. Right.
Exactly, you know, I mean,
yeah,
we all go through these things. My experience with Ricky O, I first heard about it, let's see, I have the magazine here that I first read about it. It's from a Gamers Republic.
Oh, I remember that
magazine.
Magazine.
Yep, yep. September 1999. Still got the magazine. That was the first place I ever actually heard about the movie. And looking back on it, they really didn't even talk a whole lot about it. But somehow I knew it was some violent prison movie, you know. And as soon as within the next year, I guess I probably ended up seeing it, and I've probably watched it now a dozen times since then. At least once, twice a year. Let's see. I got some notes. The dubbing.
Oh, yes.
This is like the first thing.
It's the first thing everyone would notice.
It's,
right?
Yeah. I mean, there's no real other way to watch Ricky O other than with dubbing. Even though my disc, what is it?
It must be the Tokyo Shock disc, right? The one with the brownish cover.
Let's see. Who put this out? It's probably a bootleg or something.
Megastar, never heard of them.
Cool. Yeah. Well, it's got the Chinese audio. You can watch it with subtitles, but I don't really recommend it. say if you're going to watch Ricky O, just like Shogun's Assassin.
You know, oh, yes.
Watch it with the dub. You know, it's like, it's kind of almost what makes the movie. You know?
It fits the character. Yeah, I very much agree. I mean, it definitely gives it the, the cheesier effect, right? Yeah.
It takes it straight over the top. And it's strange because it's probably done in the same, you know, places where a lot of older martial arts movies were dubbed, you know, probably some New Zealand dubbing house or something, or maybe on location in Hong Kong. I'm not sure, but, you know, the voices just, they're different, you know? Even though you might recognize some of the voices, the way they do them within Ricky O, it's straight over the top. And I think they must have known that, you know, they must have knew, let's not really try too hard on this movie. Let's try to make things a little funner than the average. Because there's nothing
about Ricky O. Yeah. Well, it's based on a manga, and, you know, even the manga is very much over the top, right? Yeah.
Reading the book, though, a little bit, which we'll get to that later, I'm sure. But reading the book, it's I only read the first issue, but Ricky's a lot cooler of a character in that than...
In the movie, he's kind of like he's half, like, badass, half, like you know, well, it's supposed to be back when he's, like, in high school. There are a couple scenes where he's with his, you know, quote-unquote girlfriend. And they're rather flitty, I guess you could say. That's kind of an old term, but
let's just say Ricky loves wearing him some cardigans, pink cardigans at that, you know.
Right.
He's just that kind of guy. But then again, I mean, that was way in the distant future, 2001. So, I mean, another little note here: did you know that Ricky O has a 7.1?
You don't say, 7.1. That sounds rather high. And speaking of rather high, I'm sure the people who voted that high were rather high themselves.
Like, in my world, you know, Ricky O would be a 10. But one thing I've learned, though, is that very few people live in my world.
Thank God.
So, you know.
You all can thank your parents for raising you correctly if you do not live in Josh's world.
Exactly. I was when I logged in, I saw that. I was like, wow, you know? I mean, I guess that's kind of the definition of, you know, the popularity of a cult movie. But so many people can be tuned into the joke, you know? Even though I don't know if Nai Kai Lam or Nai Kai Lam.
Oh, I'm pretty much sure. I mean, you just really... I can't imagine if someone worked on this thinking that, you know, it'd be some piece of high art or something. You know, it's definitely got its tongue firm. In my opinion, you know.
Yeah. Let's see. What do I got here? Going back to the dubbing, I just made a note that, you know, I don't know what Fan Su Wong sounds like, the gentleman who played Ricky, but they sure got a feminine voice to dub him over. I don't know if you ever noticed that. Like when he does the De Niro line, are you talking to me? Like, not only does he look like Michael Jackson at that point, you know, he also sounds like him. It was, like, kind of odd choice for such a burly man.
Right. The Tyson thing. The gentle giant, maybe, you know?
Oh, yeah. Nai Kai Lam, or I keep calling him Lam, but I don't know how you pronounce that. It might be Lam or Lam, whatever. He directed... He's an interesting filmmaker. At this point, I've seen Ricky O, Saga of the Phoenix, Her Vengeance, and Peacock King, and Seven of the Curse. I've seen all of those movies from him. And, he's a filmmaker that seems to change with each film, but the only thing that seems to really stay within his range is either violence or... at least some kind of foreign element to his films. We have Ricky O here is based upon a manga, or a manga, and so is Peacock King, and so is Saga of the Phoenix. Both of those have their roots in Japanese comics. Then you go to Seventh Curse. That takes place where? At the Philippines, I think, something like that. It takes place overseas. And Her Vengeance, really, that's really also probably one of his better films. Her intelligence. It's a little cat three.
Yeah, I saw that you were talking about it on the old Twitter. Something about a lot of puking or something.
Twitter machine. Oh yeah, yeah. Within like the first 20 or 30 minutes, it's like, wow, there's a lot of puke in that movie. A puke in fish hooks.
Ooh, nice combination.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's a good one. But that one actually takes place between Macau and Hong Kong. So it's the closest one to home I've seen of any of his films. But, he's an interesting filmmaker. His visual style kind of changes with each movie, it seems, you know. Kind of like he's a journeyman of cinema, I guess you could say. I've also seen him called The Edward of Hong Kong, but he's really not that bad from what I've seen. I mean, Peacock King and Saga of the Phoenix, they're not really my style of movie at all. They're a little bit of that Japanese or surreal fantasy type thing. Anyway, Saga of the Phoenix, Peacock King, they're both real surreal fantasy, kind of like, I don't even know. What's that, Sonny?
The Street Fighter?
Legend.
Oh, yes. I'll look it up. Go ahead and keep talking about it.
It's very much like that. Lots of weird colors and underground demons and, you know, at the end of the day, it's maybe a good movie for kids, but it's way too violent for kids. So,
okay.
Yeah. Not really fantastic, but yeah, Ricky O, I guess, is probably going to be the movie he'll forever be remembered for. And it's probably the least like anything I've ever seen from him. Which I guess is good for him, you know, that he could cement himself like that. I mean, this is one that's got it all, folks. Breaking headstones to martial arts training, going to college to learn how to play the flute.
Yeah, speaking of the headstone scene, did you happen to notice who the actor is that played his uncle, the guy who's training him? Okay. Actually, he is sort of he's definitely an actor who's very interesting. He's a Japanese actor. His name is Tetsuro Tamba. And if you look up his record on IMDb, you might see that he's actually done probably up to 200 movies in his lifetime. He's very much, he's kind of an interesting character in real life, I'm talking about. He's of royal, I think, not royal blood, but he's a very wealthy blood. I think maybe he's part of, he's of the lineage of the Mitsubishi family, who, you know, of course, own just about everything. And he just got into acting just because, you know, he was a handsome guy, and, you know, he actually, it's kind of interesting, he never actually works on a script. He just sort of improvises all the time.
Improvises?
And he's very well known for that. So I'm looking at IMDb, right now, and yeah, he has 230 credits to his name.
Good. I've bound to have seen something.
Oh yeah. Probably, you might, have you ever seen, The Happiness of the Katakuris? The Miike film? Yeah, he plays the grandfather in that.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's been in tons of other movies. So, you know, I mean, just reading off right now, I mean, I can see, for example, let's see, he's in the Taxing Woman series. That's a comedy series. He was in, I'm trying to find stuff, of course, that you might have seen. Oh, he's been in Samurai Reincarnation with Sonny Chiba. Message from Space. Do you remember that? We had the event with that. Yeah, he was in that. He was in one of the council members, if I remember correctly, of the bad guys, so to speak. He's in The Bullet Train with Sonny Chiba. He's got a career that spans from, you know, the late 50s to now, basically. So he's, very well known in the entertainment world in Japan.
There are a lot of familiar actors in the movie, really, if you
go look through.
I mean, Fansu Wong, who's now, he's kind of been in a couple of things here and there. He was like in Super Cop 2 with Michelle Yeoh, and Shaolin vs. Evil Dead recently, and Ip Man recently with Donnie Yen, which kind of probably is going to help maybe reinvigorate right. his career some. And there's also, who else I got here? I got, did you notice?
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah, I was a little surprised.
I didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I saw the role and stuff like that. I was watching it, and I was like, man, yeah. that guy looks like Philip Kwok. So I went back and did some research, and actually turned up, it's him. And for those who don't know, he played the Lizard Venom in the original Five Deadly Venoms. It's an old-school martial arts film. It's considered one of the best, and launched a whole series of movies from what people called the Venom Clan or the Venom Mob, which, you know, I can't name them all, but, you know, Philip Kwok was a prominent member. He was in Kid with the Golden Arm, Ten Tigers from Kwantung, Flag of Iron, Masked Avengers, and probably my favorite Venom Clan film, other than Five Deadly Venoms, Crippled.
Oh, yes. Haven't seen that in a while.
Classic.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the Sonny Chiba movie that you're trying to think of earlier is Legend of Eight Samurai.
Yes. I think I said
I think you said something about Golden Samurai, but whatever.
We'll edit that. Legend of the Eight Samurai. You can go back.
No, I won't. Okay, so anyway, was there anything else you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, the gore. I guess we went this long. Right. Hadn't even mentioned it, really. But yeah, the gore. It's one of the easily the goriest Hong Kong movie I think I've ever seen. I can't think. I mean, Untold Story has its moments or whatever, but it doesn't touch Ricky O, you know? Nothing really, rarely does it.
Yeah,
really,
but I would say the gore in Untold Story is very much different from Ricky O. You know? Yeah,
yes, more violence,
disturbing, I guess you could say. Right. You know, with all that said, though, you know, with all the gore and everything, I really thought the grossest scene, this is how, I guess, I'm not really too particular about, you know, for example, sanitation or being sanitary. I mean, I take my showers, you know, believe it or not, right? But there's one scene that I thought was kind of funny. It's sort of near the beginning where, you know, Samuel's the guy who Rikio trips in the shower. And it knocks him onto like these boards with nails sticking out of him. Well, there's one scene where he's conspiring with one of the prison guards, and they are basically, you know, taking a piss at the urinals, right? Right.
Yeah. The
and when what happens is they finish, the guard hands him a cigarette, and then Samuel starts smoking it, and then the guard washes his hand and I'm thinking, hello.
It's like, I mean, it's prison, man. I'm sure his mouth has been close to those type things plenty of times.
I'm sure Samuel wanted to smoke something, but. You know, maybe that wasn't exactly what he wanted to smoke, if you know what I'm catching, you know. let's see, what else? Well, let me go over my notes, okay? Basically, you were talking about the director earlier, and actually what I do is I looked into the production company that produced Riccio. Did you happen to catch them? Okay, they're called Diagonal Pictures Company. And, of course, they're not listed anywhere. I assume they are defunct by now. But I looked on the HKMDB, which is, you know, the IMDB for Hong Kong films. And they produced, actually, several films that are, you know, big in Asian genre film. And I'll read off. They only really produced a few items. They produced Vampire versus Vampire, Jailhouse Eros, the Blue Jean Monster, which is something I'd like to see.
Sounds good.
And also the three of the erotic ghost stories, which he directed those, right? Yeah. Oh, he did the first one.
He did the first one.
Story of Ricky and then Extreme Crisis. So it seems like at least for that, three or four years of stretch of time, and that might have been Lam's own production company as far as I know, but you know, it looks like they were sort of on the right track as far as putting out some interesting films. And it's kind of too bad, I guess, that they're not around now. In the same sentiment, I guess you could say, you know, if you look at Riccio, it had relatively low production values even for that particular time in Hong Kong. I think, you know, money was changing hands pretty decently over there, and, you know, the technology and the production values weren't exactly the same as, let's say, in Hollywood at the time, but, you know, they were definitely pretty up there as far as other world cinema is concerned. But if you look at Ricky O, I mean, you look at sort of the cheap production values, like, you know, the prison itself. I mean, it looks like they filmed part of it in a studio and part of it in a real prison. But I'm guessing the parts that they filmed in the real prison maybe were, how can I say it, like they were constructed over the real prison, because there's a lot of scenes where you can see, like, the paint is very shiny, like it was just painted like the week before. So yeah, they may have constructed around the real set itself. I'm not too sure. And of course, Riccio is very famous for all the sinister laughing. Every character has got to get their own laugh in there. And I had one time promised to make a music track with all the laughing, and I'm still working on that. It's really hard to extract all the laughing, but I guess you could hear from the trailer that I played, or, you know, there's some examples in there.
Yeah, a 2-minute track, a minute and a half, yeah, has sinister laughing going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. It was probably from one scene.
So anyway, let's see, a couple of our notes that I took. I already talked about Tetsuro Tamba. There was one more scene that I thought was kind of funny. I think he is fighting with Oscar at this point. Oscar's the one with the tattoos, the Yakuza gang four.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
Frankie.
And actually, he uses some kind of knife, and inside the, what's it called? The scabbard, I think it's called. The holder of the knife. He throws powdered glass into Ricky's face. And, you know, do you remember how Ricky gets that out of his eyes? He basically uses his elbow to smash a sewer vein of some sort, right? Now, there's two funny things about this. One thing is that, well, I didn't know that, like, water could wash glass out of your eyes, you know? I mean, you'd think you'd still be blind. And this,
the damage,
right,
like it was done.
And then the second thing is, you know, even if it can do that, that's sewer water, yeah? That's not really good for any orifice of the body, you know?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Serious infections. Especially when you're probably going to be, I forget how far that was from him being buried for 7 days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think I would be probably shooting up some penicillin about right now.
Oh, yes.
And actually, in the same scene, I'm not sure if you caught, it's very quick, when he does, I guess you could call the death blow on Oscar. It actually cuts to the, almost like an x-ray shot, like an x-ray of his head smashing in.
Yep.
Do you remember, what our movie used that particular technique?
The Street Fighter,
right. Yeah.
The first.
Actually, I think the Street Fighter used it much more effectively. You could really feel the impact in the Street Fighter. I remember when I was a kid watching the Street Fighter and I first saw that scene, I was like, whoa! Damn! Ouch! That looks painful, like that.
I hadn't got that far into the comic. I don't know if that was originally in the comic or if it's just something that's an obvious shout out to Street Fighter.
Yeah, I don't think it's in the comic. I can't call exactly, or, you know. Anyway, so do you have anything else to talk about with Ricky O?
Let's see. I mean, Frankie Chin, he's interesting. He's like the second brother of Bolo Young, obviously.
Who does he play in the movie?
He just looks like it.
Oh, Oscar.
Oscar.
Right, and Oscar is one of the Gang of Four, right?
He's the North Cell head, I think. He was also in Full Contact with Chow Yun-Fat. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Oh, yeah. I have that hanging around.
Have you seen it?
I don't remember. It's been such a long time.
It's like one of my favorite heroic bloodshed movies.
Well, I'll have to check that out tonight.
It's like insane. It's awesome. It's like super sleazy, though. It's like the, if you consider John Woo to be more classy, it's everything that John
right.
Wick isn't, you know? It also had the one of the first instances
right.
bullet time.
Mm-hmm. But,
yeah. Gloria
wait, slow down just a second.
Girlfriend.
Just a second there, you were talking about Full Contact, and you said the you called it sleazy, as if that's a bad thing? Okay.
No. I mean, it is, it's like the characters in it are so nasty. It's like, I was going to mention Gloria Yip, who plays Ricky's
yes.
girlfriend. She's been in, she must be Nai Kai Lam's muse, because she's been in, she was in Peacock King and Saga of the Phoenix. She played the Hell Virgin in that. She was also in one of his later movies, The Cat. So she's probably the only actor who's been in four of his movies.
Wow. I wonder what she thinks about that.
Maybe yeah. they're married, God knows.
Or at least
something on the side.
Like a friendship.
Right. Yeah, they just get buds. They're like hanging weekends.
Yep, yep.
Do whatever. Assistant Warden's the coolest guy in the
oh,
world.
God,
best
yeah.
character ever. I don't know what's up with the ending, how martial arts and being a good kung fu expert, you know, can help you do what the warden does, but I won't go into it, you know, spoilers, but yeah. That's,
yeah. Well, it helps you learn how to eat a lot. And you know, he had that the fake eye, right? Did he notice what he kept in his eye? Oh God! Yeah,
yes, miss. I was reading that I don't know where, but somewhere they actually dubbed over it and called it drugs, even though it was mints everywhere else. I think it may be Germany or something like that. Their dub of it calls it like I don't know. I guess pills. Like he's pilling up.
That's interesting. His eye. I wonder what the original says. Yeah,
it's probably mints, I guess. Because did he offer?
Yeah, he offered. I think he offered the sub guard or something.
Oscar.
Yeah, maybe it was Oscar. I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, Oscar, want some mints?
Oh, speaking of actors and actresses, we were talking about there's the Gang of Four, and they're basically the bosses of the different wings of the prison. Did you catch the other names of the other Gang of Four?
Yeah,
right.
Rogan is the girl who is a man somehow.
Right.
Yukari.
Right. Yeah, she's yeah. That's who I was going to talk about. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you said that before that probably the audience would be very much in tune with, you know, Rikio being a joke of a movie, but at least a humorous movie. To say the least.
Yes.
And actually, I was on YouTube. I was looking for a trailer of Rikio, and someone had written a comment in one of the trailers saying, "No, why did they have a woman playing a man's role? Why didn't they just have a man play that?" And I don't know. Do you know anything about Yukari Oshima's career? Yeah, or background?
Background? She's a Japanese actress. Her mother was Chinese. She became a stunt woman over there in Japan. And eventually, like, her, you know, stunt house or whatever relocated to Hong Kong. So that's how she got into
right.
the Hong Kong film industry. She started working there, and I think she did, like, maybe 20 movies there, or just several movies, before she eventually moved away to the Philippines
right.
during the 90s. And she worked in the Filipino film industry before moving back to Japan,
right,
where
yeah.
she lives now.
Yeah, I think the answer to that that commenter is basically that, you know, in Hong Kong, you know, Oshima was actually, you know, a very well-known actress. Well, I don't know if you'd say actress, but martial artist. And, you know, if you have someone who's a big name like that, you're going to try to fit him in no matter what.
And I'll tell you the truth, the first time I watched it, I didn't realize
oh.
it was a woman. I didn't. I mean, everybody's always like, oh, it's so obvious. I didn't.
Well, you know, Josh, that like, really tells us a lot about you.
I was somehow attracted. No, but, no, I didn't realize it was a chick. I was like, I just thought it was like some guy hamming it up, you know, like he's one of them boys right. in the jailhouse, you know. But obviously,
well, I mean, and not to be cruel or mean to Oshima, but she is not exactly the most beautiful woman in the world. She is somewhat of on the slightly masculine side as far as looks go. Yeah, but. I have to say she is a very, very physical person. I've seen several of her movies before, and she is, I would say, second maybe only to Tsushiomi, you know, as far as the Japanese martial arts goes. So anyway, so the other two of the Gang of Four were Tarzan. Yeah, he was the boss of the East Wing. And
I didn't get his name nor...
South Cell, his name is Brandon. Yeah. Do you remember who is who? Like each of the bosses has their thing, right?
Yeah. Brandon has the little throwing the blades on ropes. Right. Whatever they are.
And
Tarzan, I don't know, he's just a big guy.
He's the crusher basically. In fact, he's the one who crushed, who does the old head crush, the famous one from The Daily Show, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm sure, actually, we were talking about how Rikkyo has become such a cult film, and I think part of the reason is The Daily Show, because after that segment, that intro segment came out, I'm sure everyone was thinking, or you know, trying to figure out, yeah, what's that? I gotta see it, you know? Well, anything else that we can talk about with Rikkyo?
It's gory. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
As we said, very physical. A lot of good martial arts in it. It's definitely a winner. I mean, I don't know if are we going to have any kind of rating system on this podcast? I mean,
we talked about what was it?
Oh yes, that's correct. Yeah, definitely buy it. Definitely buy it.
Yeah, if you don't have Ricky,
don't even bootleg it. This is one that you have to buy. Definitely.
Yes.
And I didn't say the word bootleg because you know bootlegging is wrong. Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. We don't. No.
Exactly.
We do not encourage that.
Even though you did in the first segment. Anyway.
Whoa. I didn't actually encourage that, and I'm not saying I did that. It could have been a ninja.
Cut out the jibber jabber.
So anyway,
don't be babbling like a fool. Say what you got to say. That's all. Then shut your dang pie hole.
I think Mr. T said it all, and I think we're finished with this segment. So buy it.
Yes.
Rikkyo, the story of Ricky. We're going to take another short break right now, and then we're going to be back with some of our mini segments. We got a couple of things coming up. Let's see, in our mini segments we have our Netflix Instant Watch section, our show and tell, and also replies from our Twitter question that we put out just yesterday and today. So we will be back in just a second, and enjoy the music until we are.
Ricky Ho, age 21, blood type AB, parents unknown, brought up in an orphanage. Didn't do well in both primary and high school. He joined a music school to learn the flute, then disappeared when he was a senior.
We'll tear your soul apart.
Some people lose their faith because heaven shows them too little. But how many people lose their faith because heaven shows them too much?
You'll never grow old, Michael. And you'll never die. But you must be.
Klaatu Verata.
Maybe a game kicking balls or something.
Hey,
like
that's
that.
Cool, man.
So holy damn it, I've got gingivitis.
It's kind of like a vampire boner.
I would kill to be a tight leather suit.
Everything you've ever learned about freestyle orifice probing, you learned from me.
Oh, this definitely gets an all-time.
For more information, visit cadaverlab.com or search for us on iTunes.
Hey, and welcome back, and hope you enjoyed the Rikkyo review that we both did. Next, what we're going to do is we're coming up on a block of mini segments. So instead of having one big segment, we're actually having three that we smashed together. The first one is the Netflix Instant Watch. Second is Show and Tell. And the third one, we're going to talk about the replies that we got from the Twitter question we sent out yesterday and today. Let's start off with the Netflix Instant Watch. Tell us, Josh, what is this segment all about anyway?
Well, at this point, if you're a movie geek and you don't have Netflix, you're living in the past, man.
Oh, yes.
But anyway, yeah, Netflix has their Instant Watch little program, which if you have an account, you can watch instantaneously any movie from a list of movies that they have uploaded. It started off kind of slow with maybe not a whole lot of interesting stuff on there, but it's becoming more and more, you know, a place to find obscure stuff, you know, really quick. And since we're all, a lot of people, we're all going back and forth to it, finding new little movies on there that, you know, otherwise you probably wouldn't have checked out from Netflix. You know, we just thought we'd point out some of the cooler entries.
Yeah, Netflix actually, they upload quite a bit. They have a Twitter account just for their instant stuff, and they'll actually put up basically what they've uploaded just recently.
I need to actually get on that.
Yeah, that's where I get a lot of my tips, so yes. Check that out too.
Sweet. I guess I'll go first with my pick. It's Z Channel, A Magnificent Obsession. Have you heard of it?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's great. It's directed by Alexandra Cassavetes, John Cassavetes' daughter.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, and it's a documentary. It tells the story of Z Channel, one of the world's first pay cable stations. It was hosted in Los Angeles back in the 80s. And it was this strange, like, breed of contemporary pop culture where they had a lot of, you know, famous movies that would, you know, just as soon as they could get the rights, they'd air them. But along with all that, they had a lot of really, you know, underground art house stuff, you know. Even, you know, they'd have, you know, Godard, and they'd have Herzog and stuff like that, but they'd also air a lot of movies that otherwise just wouldn't be seen. Like, they restored, what was that movie? I should have wrote that down. Let's just say they did a lot of restorations and, you know, brought a lot of really interesting movies to light for people. And the film, the documentary, it focuses on their chief of programming named Jerry Harvey. He was like a really interesting cat. He was basically just a little bit weirded out, but also, you know, kind of brilliant in the fact that, you know, most of us probably would assume a channel like that just couldn't thrive, you know. We all assume, oh, it's our own little world, these movies and all this interesting stuff that we get into that most people would just go, oh, that's weird, you know, I'm not going to watch that. But he took it to the people and went out selling it house by house. You know, he had his people selling it house by house, really. But he programmed it. He found these movies. He sat there and brought it to life for everyone. And it was a pretty big success for the time that it was around. But, you know, everybody, you know, with that level of quirkiness like he had, it leads to some bad things, and eventually his depression or whatever it is drove him to killing his own spouse and then committing suicide. So the movie actually starts telling you this, showing you like I believe the police scanner or something like that tells you, you know, what happened. And the whole movie's just, it's like this channel, man, it's enthralling for a movie geek because you sit there and you watch it and you're like, my God, this would be like heaven to be able to come home in the afternoon and see all of these crazy movies. They have Tarantino talks in it, a lot of famous, you know, film geeks and film directors and stuff. And really, it's a lot like, what is it, not quite Hollywood, and the fact that after you watch it, you're probably going to add about 30 movies to your, you know, to watch.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's really, it's about, I think it is close to around 2 hours long or something like that, but you barely even notice it. It's just, it's an intense little film.
And what year was it released?
I think last year.
Oh, just last year. Okay.
Yeah, it's very new, yeah.
Okay, well, added to the queue right now.
Yeah, definitely, you'll love it. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm definitely into that kind of independent DIY type of thing. I mean, that's part of the reason why we're doing this podcast now and why I did the webcast earlier. And, you know, I've been in punk bands and I've done fanzines and I've done, you know, college radio, all these kinds of things, you know, to, sort of promote and, you know, have fun with the community so the community has something to enjoy, right? That's very interesting. I'll have to check that out. That's definitely
great. Yeah. And what's your choice?
Mine is a little more mainstream. It's actually a movie that, turned, 30 last year. And, I hadn't even known it until I, happened to read it about it in an article. By saying that, I didn't know it, actually is more like, this is a movie that has followed me actually through my entire life. It's kind of interesting. It's a movie from 1979. It's called, Time After Time. Have you seen it?
No, I have not. Who's in it?
Well, Malcolm McDowell. He plays actually H.G. Wells, you know, the author.
Okay.
David Warner. I don't know if you...
Yes, from,
Tron.
He was in, Waxwork, right?
Yeah, right. He's got that long, long mopey face. Yeah.
Oh wait, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Secret of the Ooze.
Okay, I'll have to trust you on that one.
he played the doctor, the scientist, he's great.
Yeah, he usually plays those kinds of roles, but actually in Time After Time, he plays, Jack the Ripper. Yeah.
Oh, a little different.
Yeah. Dr. Ripper to you. So,
yes.
So anyway, Time After Time, the reason why I say this movie has followed me is that, this is a movie that's, set in San Francisco, and, being that I'm from San Francisco, the local stations would, play this movie a lot. I think I've seen this movie at least 20 times. So, you know, I would catch it, you know, midday on the weekends or whatever, you know. You know, any movie that's set in San Francisco is, you know, one that the local channels will want to play every once in a while, at least, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, and then when I moved to, I've lived in Hawaii and Japan as well, and when I moved to Hawaii, you know, I had set up in my apartment the first movie that I watched on TV just happened to be, again, Time After Time. And then in Japan, also, one time, after I'd gotten home from work, you know, I just turned on the TV and, you know, what movie was on the tube? Well, Time After Time. So I don't know why, but this movie just keeps following me. It follows me through time, I guess you could say. But since you haven't seen the movie, let me go through it a little bit. It's a time travel movie. It's based on time travel. Of course, H.G. Wells was the author of The Time Machine. Right, yeah. Which, and it's based on, well, it's not based on fact, of course. But it's kind of based on H.G. Wells is the inventor of this time machine. And he is basically looking, he's pursuing Jack the Ripper, again, played by David Warner. So basically they end up going through time to 1970s era San Francisco. And then H.G. Wells goes to pursue, continues to pursue Jack the Ripper. And, well, you know, I don't want to go into any spoilers, but it's a really cool movie. I mean, are you into time travel movies?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Like Back to the Future, et cetera. You know, those are the
ones.
But I just like the time travel thing. I like, you know, thinking about, you know, being able to go back in time. And of course there's the old time paradox of, you know, if you change something from the past, will it affect something, to you, especially personally in the future? Mm-hmm. It's kind of an interesting, concept to think about.
And it deals with that a lot?
It does to a degree. I think what's more interesting about the story is that, one thing is the performances are very good. You know, Malcolm McDowell is known to be a bit of a ham, and he is kind of a ham in this movie too, but it's to pretty good effect. I mean, he plays H.G. Wells, who's, you know, who was if I remember correctly, he was British, correct? Yeah. But anyway, so, he does play him to very, I guess you could say, to great effect.
Yes.
And David Warner is actually pretty creepy as, Jack Cooper. what makes it really nice is that there are basically, two set pieces in the entire film. There's the, you know, there's the back in time where they're back in, I believe it's maybe it's 18th century England. And then you, when they go into time to 1970, San Francisco, you know, there's this really interesting contrast between the two time periods that, that really stand out as far as making, as far as driving the story along. You know, you don't feel like, some time travel movies kind of feel like, you know, there's been a shift in time, but it's so, like, bizarre that you can't really relate to it, you know? But since it's, the fact is that they, you know, moved from a time that was in the far past that we at least have some, context to understanding, and then moved to a time that's, you know, pretty close to now, it seems a lot more, I guess you'd say, believable, not so science fiction-y.
Yeah,
you know, as,
more set in the real world.
Right, exactly. So it, that's, in that, you know, in that sense, it's kind of an interesting film. So, you know, I would recommend checking it out. It, it's on Instant, so, you know.
I've added it to my Instant watch queue.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Tell me what you think of it.
I'll check it out maybe tonight, maybe later. I'm not sure.
Okay, okay. Well.
I got some Herzog flicks I gotta go through too, but I might bump it up.
Okay, and of course the, listeners can, tell us what they think of our recommendations, and we'll be announcing the contact information a little later, okay? Yeah.
Yes.
So anyway, let's go on to a little show and tell. So
show and tell.
Right, so what's show and tell, Josh?
Basically just anything cool that we find on the net that we want to pass along to the readers, I mean viewers, or I mean listeners.
One of them.
Yeah, just yeah. Websites, blogs, whatever, just something cool that we find, basically. And, me, I'm gonna go with, some friends, actually. They have this website, grindhousedatabase.com.
Oh, yes. I love that. Yeah, I love that site. Awesome
yeah,
site.
Pete runs it, and Sebastian, I believe he does like the web management work. It's basically, for those who haven't been there, it's a Wikipedia type website for exploitation movies and, you know, just grindhouse movies. It can, you know, pages include like poster art, the theme songs, available DVDs, cool quotes, reviews, you know, press kits, lobby cards, whatever. You know, just basically whole smorgasbord of information about any given film. And yeah, they also just got their forum up and running again, thankfully. So
oh, excellent.
Now the community's back. So yeah, the Deuce.
All right.
Grindhouse database.
All right. Yeah, that's a great site. That's a great site. I had linked to it from my own blog, in fact. It, I mean, my blog doesn't even deal with, you know, grindhouse movies, so to speak, but I love that site. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Grindhousedatabase.com. That's it. All, you know, one word, GRINDHOUSEDATABASE.com.
Very cool.
Yes, sir. And what about you?
Well, for me, since we were reviewing Ricky O, and as we mentioned, Ricky O is based on a manga, I initially wanted to do some research and asked a friend of mine, who's a big manga fan, you know, whether he had some copies of Ricky O that I could check out, maybe in Japanese or English, whichever one. And he told me about this site that actually has the Ricky O manga for free to read.
Yes.
I don't think you can download them, but there are scans that you can check out.
Well, they're like JPEGs, I believe, so you could probably, you know, right-click and save as
right.
if you really wanted to have them, but
right.
if it's hosted, who cares?
Right, yeah, that's true. But anyway, they're located at www.onemanga.com/Ricky-O. So the one manga is O-N-E-M-A-N-G-A, again, .com/Ricky O. You can also just very simply Google Ricky O manga, and I think the very first result comes up with that. So
yeah.
That's what I did. My friend told me that. He didn't tell me the site address. He said, oh, just look for Ricky O manga and you'll be able to find it. So, but you were able to check out one of the volumes. Mm-hmm. Is that correct, Josh?
The first issue.
Okay.
I went through it. And I mean, the movie in it are pretty close, you know. I mean, the things that happen, at least in the first probably 10 minutes of the movie,
right.
it goes into the whole guy who made the little car for his daughter.
Oh, right.
And he's getting out of jail. All that stuff's right there in the manga. And then the whole thing with the eyeball getting stabbed with the nails on the floor.
All right.
All that stuff's in there. So, yeah, I was kind of surprised that it seems to be a fairly accurate little adaptation, you know?
Yeah, I think if you actually watch the official trailer, the original theatrical trailer for Rikkyo, they actually intersplice scenes from the manga, yeah, and you could definitely tell that they were trying to, you know, give a little juxtaposition as to the accuracy of, you know, the movie to the manga. So, yeah, I mean, definitely check that out. There are, let's see, 77 volumes. So Rikkyo is a pretty long manga. I guess it was, I don't know, actually know from what years to what years it was written, but you know, 77, that's quite a bit of reading to do right there.
I want to know what happens after the movie.
Oh, you know, yeah. you know what happens?
What?
Rikkyo gets a job, and like he gets married, and
he works at Jiffy Lube.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, takes his kids fly fishing.
Right. You know? Yep. Exactly. Exactly.
It's an interesting read. It's really complicated.
Cut out the jibber jabber. Don't be babbling like a fool. Say what you got to say. That's all. Then shut your dang pie hole.
So, Mr. T wants us to move on to the Twitter question replies.
That T.
Yeah. And let me explain what that was. On Twitter, we have two accounts. We have my account is at The Cinema Show, and your account, Josh, is at Varied Celluloid, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we put out a question to our followers, I guess you'd say. It sounds kind of like arrogant to say, I have a follower, you know?
Our homeboys.
Yeah. Our peeps. Like our peeps. Our peeps.
All peeps. Whoa, was that Stallone? Yeah, what the heck?
I think that was just, yeah, okay, never mind.
Cope, yeah.
So the question was, and to keep with the theme of the show, the question was, what is your favorite movie based on a manga or anime?
Yes.
And we got actually quite a few responses. In fact, I had a response just about 5 minutes ago, which is pretty cool. Yeah, and I'll read that one a little later. But well, why don't you start off? Tell us who replied to your question to your account, okay. Josh.
I have Heaven's Trash here. He said of the ones I readily know are based on anime manga, he's got to say Ichi the Killer. You know, classic pick right there. That's probably my pick as well. I guess we'll go into that at the end there.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and Mike at Cadaver Labs got No Hesitation, Old Boy, then Ichi.
Wait, slow down. I just want to say something about Mike Cadaver Lab. Yes. Boise State, number one!
Since I don't follow football, I'll assume...
Just believe me, they're number one, okay?
Okay, all right. Christopher Swank, a.k.a. Abnormal Freak, he wrote, though apparently only loosely based on the manga, I have to go with Old Boy. Boy! So he actually wrote that out. I'm not just retarded. Well, I am too.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure people could argue that.
Yeah, you and Heaven's Trash especially would argue
yes,
that.
Yes.
And Deadly Dolls, she picked Old Boy as well. So, a lot of popularity with Old Boy.
Yeah, yeah.
But kind of expected, I guess.
Right, yeah. And I want to say that initially, actually, when we were thinking about this question, we were actually a little worried that people wouldn't be able to find any movies that they knew were based on anime or manga. Yeah. So I'm really happy that, you know, there are people out there who know. Because at least for Japanese film, I would guess that the number of movies that are based on anime and manga are just about as equal to those based on, for example, novels or, you know, TV shows or something like that. There are actually quite a few, and I'll read some off a little later, but let me give you my replies.
Okay.
Let's see. The Horror Geek, who is Mike Bracken. Right?
Yeah.
He chose The Wizard of Darkness. Have you seen The Wizard of Darkness, Josh?
Have not. No, sir.
Okay. Actually,
familiar with the cover, though.
Yes. Actually, when I first read the title, I was like, Wizard of Darkness, who's that? And I had to remember that it's also known as Echo Echo Azarok. So you might want to check it out under that name. And I think Tokyo Shock also put out those DVDs. I think there are two in that series, so it's kind of fun. Like we were kind of joking about, the cover of the DVD sort of looks like The Craft or some magic drama type of thing, but it's a little better than that.
Yeah, it looks like V Cinema style stuff. I mean, like the almost Japanese market.
Most definitely.
Yes.
Okay, so let's see. Andy from NOTLP, Night of the Living podcast. He chose Ichi the Killer and Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind. Nausicaä is a film by the great animator Hayao Miyazaki. Have you seen that one, Josh?
No, I'm really, I know Miyazaki's work, and everybody's told me forever to check out Mononoke, but have not.
Oh,
just hadn't got around to it
yet. Definitely. I would definitely check out, Mononoke and also Totoro, my neighbor Totoro, right?
Yes.
So, and just in case people call foul on Nausicaä, because Nausicaä is basically an anime, and you can't say really that an anime is based on an anime, but Nausicaä actually was first a manga. I think it was released it started in 1982, and then Miyazaki didn't animate the manga until I think 1984 is when that was released. I'll have to check IMDb later. Anyway, onward to the other responses. The Real Somebody responded with Uzumaki. That's a nice one.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had listed that for when I was talking to Emily, Deadly Dolls. That was one that, came to mind as being based off of manga.
Yeah, I actually really like the manga, too. I don't really read manga very often, but for that movie, which is real
strange,
to say the least.
Yes.
I thought checking out the manga would be in my best interest. And it was.
Yeah,
and it was. Yeah.
Did it make more sense? Or?
No, not at all.
No.
Why would it?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Kind of like Akira was.
Right,
but, yeah.
Exactly. Okay, so anyway, onwards. Yakihito, who's actually a friend of mine in real life, his name is Kemek. He chose Lone Wolf and Cub.
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah, it's definitely
good. Gotta go with the... Oh, yeah, gotta show him some love.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then Dissolved Pet just actually wrote in about a half hour ago while we're recording this. Yeah, and he also chose Nausicaä.
Really?
Yeah, so that,
interesting.
That might be a tip for you to check that one out, too, Josh.
Gosh, I'm so behind the times, man. So anything animated, I'm so behind the times.
Again, no arguments here.
I've never seen Wall-E or any of that stuff. I'm really not that interested in it, but everybody keeps telling me, man. As for my favorite pick, I'd probably go with Ichi the Killer. I mean, it's kind of an obvious choice. I mean, Ichi's got so popular since its initial release. I actually read the manga later on, and it differs a little bit in that it's probably a little easier to understand. It still basically keeps a lot more to what happens in the film than I was actually expecting, because you hear so many stories about how, Miike changes everything on set and how improvisational he is. The movie follows the book pretty close, and it's just a fantastic movie dealing with sadomasochism and the relationship with that with people, and how we view each other and how we feel about each other and stuff like that. It's just an amazing little movie. And you?
Well, I was thinking about this really closely because, like I said, there are plenty of Japanese movies that are based on anime or manga. That's like one of the main sources of adaptations over there. And really, and I know this might be slightly controversial, I'm actually going to choose Akira.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
It was originally a manga, and, I... Just like everyone else, I don't know what the fuck is going on with that movie, but it's so visually interesting and so kinetic and so bizarre that you just can't help but feel that even though you can't, you couldn't get a chainsaw to cut through all the, you might say the depth, or you could also say the garbage that movie puts out. that you could tell it's at least something that's monumental and something that, you know, you don't necessarily have to love, but you should at least check out. I think that's a very strong movie. And there's actually supposed to be a live action version coming out sometime.
What?
Yeah. And you know the guy who wrote The Book of Eli? Yeah, he wrote the first script for it, so it might be interesting. This guy named Gary Whitta, he was actually a writer for, I think, PC Gamer magazine. Interesting. Yeah.
Really?
Interesting.
I have a couple issues around here. But I could see that being interesting, especially, man, can you imagine a live-action version of the ending with Tetsuo?
Yeah. That would be so awesome. But anyway, that's my pick. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. What did you want to say something else?
Oh, no. I was just going to say, it's probably not my, you know, I've made it abundantly clear before, it's not my favorite, you know, anime or anything like that, but I give it its respect, you
right.
know. It's definitely a film that deserves
right.
it. It's amazing visually. And
right.
It's an intense movie for mm-hmm. sure. So, yeah. I mean, I'm probably partially a fan at the same time. I get angry with it.
Yeah, so. Exactly. But I think that's what's good about it is that it provokes a response. You know, it's not just...
Yeah.
You know, because most anime... you know, I'm not an anime fan. I just kind of watch them. Just kind of like, yeah, okay, a lot of stuff's happening. Right? But with Akira, at least it makes you want to watch it, even though it's so goofy and it, like you said, makes you a little angry.
I like it a lot more than like Ghost in the Shell, which is equally as like,
right.
But yeah, I like
exactly.
it a lot more than that.
By the way, I also wanted to tell you about, not tell you, but tell listeners about a bunch of other movies they may know of based on anime or manga. For example, Crying Freeman. You ever seen Crying Freeman?
Yes, I have. I actually like that movie.
Okay, well, that's your problem, I guess.
I actually do. I think it's actually pretty cool.
Do I have to break out Mr. T again?
Okay,
so there we go. So there's also Death Note, which came out just a few years ago, the live-action version. Fist of the North Star. Hey, people forgot about that.
Big
That's
time.
Pretty classic.
Man, at least the anime is.
Yeah.
I don't know. The live action, I've seen
bits. Oh, it's pretty awful.
Yeah, it's so...
Yeah. This is one... Here's a movie that I'm sure a lot of people don't know about, which is actually something that I would recommend checking out. It's kind of a smaller film. It's kind of cute, kind of a sweet kind of movie. Not really a genre type of thing, but it's called Honey and Clover. Have you seen that one before?
Heard
okay.
of it.
If I remember correctly, Viz Pictures, Viz, of course, being the big manga publisher, they publish the manga and they also put out the live-action film. I would recommend checking it out. It's kind of like a teen romance type of thing, but it's nice enough where it's not like sappy. And, well, it's a little sappy, okay. But anyway, so moving on, Lady Snowblood. Hello.
Classic.
Oh, yeah. How can you miss it?
Big time. Yeah.
And Yo-Yo Girl Cop. And actually, there was a couple of earlier films for Yo-Yo Girl Cop. They weren't called Yo-Yo Girl Cop. They were called by the original name of the manga, Skeban Deka. So you might want to check those out. I think there's actually a box set out with the first two movies, the first two Skeban Deka movies. And I think it has Yo-Yo Girl Cop in it, too. Can't remember. So let's see, I guess we're finished with this segment, and we want to thank everyone for writing in and replying to us.
Yes.
We will have another Twitter question out before our next show, probably one or two days before that we actually record it. And speaking of which, this is basically the end of the show, but let's go into a short segment break, and then we'll talk about what's coming up on our next episode. Does that sound good to you, Josh?
Yes, sir.
Cut out the jibber-jabber.
Okay.
Don't be babbling like a fool. Say what you got to say. That's all. Then shut your dang pie hole.
Yes.
Mr. T hates me.
We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Thank you.
Hey, and welcome back. And you know what time it is, Josh?
What time is it, John?
It's 4:30 p.m.
Okay,
anyway. No, seriously, it's time for us to finish up the podcast.
That was my theme music right there I was going to work on. But
That's pretty sweet, yeah.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah,
Sweet. I feel like Mr. T is about to bump in.
Yeah, you're correct. So thanks for joining us for episode 1. We're going to have episode 2 out. When do you think we'll have this finished? Another couple weeks or so? 2 weeks?
What year is this? 2010?
Yeah, I think,
2012.
Okay, cool.
Calling
I'm glad that we can get together before that time. It took quite a while for us to get together for this.
But hey, I think we can do it by then, right, man.
We should have another podcast out in another couple of weeks, I would guess, though. But we'll keep everyone posted on Twitter and Varied Celluloid and all the other avenues that we have. What are we going to do for the next show, Josh?
It has been decided. Shinjuku Triad Society from Takashi Miike.
Wow, excellent.
Yes. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah, okay.
Glad I could help. It's cool.
So if everyone wants to watch that along with us or follow along with us while we're reviewing the movie, again, Shinjuku Triad Society. And that's part of a trilogy, isn't it, Josh?
Yes, the Black Society Trilogy. That's what they call it now. Cool.
Excellent.
I remember back in the day, it used to be I thought it used to be called the Shinjuku Triad Trilogy or something like that. But then Arts Magic released it under the Black Society label, so I suppose it's probably closer to the real deal.
Pretty spooky.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And by the way, our contact info is vcinema@variedcelluloid.net.
Yes.
We're encouraging everyone to, if you'd like to, contribute to the show. You can send us feedback for you podcasters or bloggers out there. You can send us promos. You send them in form of MP3s. Again, the contact info is vcinema@variedcelluloid.net.
And if you want to write a letter or something like that, email, we'll read it.
Yes, of course.
I'm working on my reading abilities. I've almost conquered the
English. I can testify to that too.
Yeah, I read something a while back. It was like Run Cat Run, you know.
Oh, very good. Yes.
That's on my list of book recommendations for anybody listening right now.
Very good. Yes, you're doing very well today.
Thank you. I've come with emotions.
And speaking of which, as I mentioned, we do have our own site and. Josh, you have variedcelluloid.net, right?
Yes, sir. variedcelluloid.net.
Right, and we also have a vCinema sub-site, right, on the Varied Celluloid site. That's just the same address /vCinema, correct?
Yes, or you can go to vcinema.variedcelluloid.net.
Right. Right. And I do have to commend you for doing such a great job putting that site together. It looks, Josh, excellent.
Man, after the beating I've taken tonight, this feels good.
Yeah.
Three in a row, right. Man. No Mr. T.
Right. And while we're patting each other on the back, I do want to say thanks to a couple of friends who contribute some music to our podcast. The music that's playing on the outro, as well as the intro to the show, was done by Kemic, the Dope Computer. He's an old buddy of mine. He has 2 releases out in spring. They're going to be on a label called Muti Music. And you can be able to get those releases by going to www.mutimusic.com. So mutimusic.com. You can also email him at kemicthedopecomputer@hotmail.com. And the Kemic is spelled K-E-M-E-K. And also the music that was provided that bridged our segments was by another old friend of mine named Lord Tang. And he didn't send any particular release information to me, but I know he is part of the Gigante Sound crowd up in the East Bay here in the Bay Area. And their website is www.gigantesound, that's spelled GIGANTESOUND.com. Español. So who do you got to thank there, Josh?
I could just go through our, you know, friends, blog friends and stuff like that. Emily at Deadly Dollhouse, deadlydollshouse.blogspot.com. It's really turned into my night, man. This is great. Mr. T's coming on any second. Heaven's Trash, that's heavens with a Z, .blogspot.com. Yes. He's a very cool guy, yes. Mondo Movie, the Mondo Movie Podcast at mondomovie.com. Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, ggtmc.com.
I can't do the applause Mike, every time.
Yes, I know. It will be here all night. Mike Bracken at thehorrorgeek.com. I actually designed that website, and he's a good friend. He's a rad dude. Knows everything about horror. Show podcast at right now. Well, I mean, you can still go to the Podomatic website. I don't have the Libsyn address up, but showshow.podomatic.com. They're one of the funniest, most awesome podcasts on the net. Cadaver Lab at cadaverlab.com, CADAVERLAB.com. Cinema Snob, that's Brad Jones, cool dude, awesome guy. Cinema thecinemasnob.com.
Yeah. I love Brad's videos. They're awesome.
Oh, yeah. He's friggin' amazing. What did he just do? He did a new episode of the Bruno Mattei Show.
Oh, I gotta check that out. Yeah, that's cool. That's good stuff.
And then cinecultania.libsyn.com. That's CINECULTANIA. That's Dissolve Pets podcast. It just got started. They're doing like an Australian look at cult movies and stuff like that. And I listened to the first show the other day and it was pretty darn.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out. That sounds pretty interesting.
Oh yeah, they're the cool people. Him and his name is Ben. Her name is Lexi.
All right.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. All right, so I guess that's the end of the show, and again, we'll have the second episode of our podcast out in a couple more weeks. If you want to contact us, again, it's zcinema@variedcelluloid.net, and if you want to check out our portal site, it's at variedcelluloid.net/vcinema. So I guess this is the end of the show. We enjoyed having you have us in your iPod or MP3 player, and we'll see you, I guess, in a couple of weeks. All right.
Yes, sir.
See you guys later.
Cut out the jibber jabber. Don't be babbling like a fool. Say what you got to say. That's all. Then shut your dang pie hole.
Mr. T hates me. Dang it.